Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
No, Hogan, don't you come up here.
Come on to the Rock Show. Come on to the People's Show. Come on to the Premier Show. SmackDown.
It's the 9th of May in the year of our Lord, 2002.
Tiger Woods, PGA Tour Golf.
About a boy, still number one. Blue All Rise, still number one. The Queen Mum, still dead. The Sugar Babes, Freak Like Me, is in one single.
Oh, what a tune.
Not just of this week, but of 2002.
I believe it was a cover or a remix of a song from the 90s.
It was. And I read that title and went, oh, that's the Don't You Wish Your Girlfriend Was a Freak Like Me.
Oh,
that's not the song,
not that,
is it?
No.
It's not, Silly Billy.
So there was a song which was like, I'll be a freak until the day, until the dawn. But the actual beat of the song is Our Friends Electric.
Yes. And Gary Newman was quoted saying he considered the Sugar Babes version of Freak Like Me to be better than Our Friends Electric.
Oh. Gary Newman, one for making correct decisions.
It was just before he said, yeah, G. Newman, Inc. Yeah, that's
the... Thank you for the money.
Thank you very much, mate.
Thank you for the house, brother.
It is a catchy song, like, so.
It's a great song. I do like it.
The fact that I remembered the chorus all these years later, it's a good sign.
It just sits there in the back of your mind.
Yeah, like a bad smell. Arsenal clinched the 8th FA Cup victory of their history of a... Oh, cares. Big game this
Gunners
week.
Gunners care. Up the Gunners.
Up the Gooners. Is Britney's Dance Beat. Maybe we should be talking about Arsenal instead. Britney's Dance Beat is a rhythm game based Ooh. Around the music and videos of American singer Brittany Spears.
Brittany Ferries.
That's right. I've never heard of her. The game was released exclusively on PlayStation 2. It contains Baby One More Time, Oops, Stronger, Overprotected, and I'm a Slave for You.
Baby One More Time getting another run out in 2024.
When's that playing?
Tenacious D have covered it.
Have they? I'm seeing them in
May. Have you not heard it?
No.
Oh,
well,
mate,
don't play it on this podcast.
I'm going to blow your mind. I think I'm going to play it. Because they did what all clever people do in music now, and they released it on Twitter first.
Oh, is that a real thing?
Yeah, a lot of people release songs on Twitter first.
Oh.
Sounds
pretty all right, yeah.
Any good? Full songs on Spotify now. Go support Jack Black.
Good. I'm glad that we could be able to help those up-and-comers, Tenacious D.
Hey, it's tough out there these days. I'm glad that, you know, they're still keeping on and keeping on.
Yeah. Anyway, Entertainment Weekly say, not much here.
What an episode of Entertainment Weekly! Yeah. Not much going on. Is it like that day on the radio where there was no news? They just played classical music.
Sometimes this podcast feels like this. And by sometimes, I mean every week. It was given a review of 4 out of 10 and called a mindless version of Simon Says. And you're like, just you wait. Just you wait till we're buying props to do Simon Says on Xbox.
Not long now.
Praising charity for efficiency on the delivery, Terry assures that he will pass his compliments on to Chris. Charity Dingle's run appears to be running very smoothly until they become concerned about the strange noises in the back of the truck.
This is Emmerdale, by the way. This is the Emmerdale recap.
I thought it'd be better if I just didn't say it.
He just Emmerdale. Rolled into it.
It's like, ooh, where was this happening?
What?
Convinced they aren't hearing things, Terry bravely decided to check their stock, only to find more stock than they initially accounted for. The illegitimate load raises charity suspicions. Who has pulled the wool over her eyes? Well, it is Emmerdale Farm. It could actually be legit wool.
Legit wool.
It's shoot wool, as Ross would say. And that was all that was happening in the weird, sadly disappointing world of 2002. But what was happening in the amazing, name-changing world of professional wrestling? These questions can only be answered here, nowhere else. Don't use Google. Right here, right now, on the Cult Lotta Classic SmackDown Review. Hello, Tom. Hello, Matthew.
Hello.
How you doing?
Hello, both. I am Fat Boy Slim, right here, right now. You're correct. All is good. Funny you mentioned name changing, because this week we've been doing wedding planning. My good lady and I.
Oh, who's getting married? Diane, on our regular visits to Rodney, but there is a deep concern for his health. Oh, that's nice. I didn't realize you were there.
Pete Gass is best, man. Good on him. So we've been doing weddings. And it's funny because a lot of people, we live in a very modern time. So I'm getting married in November. And we live in a very modern time. And a lot of people seemingly this week have said to Alex, either said to Alex or said to me, so what's happening with the surname? And Alex has gone, well, I'm just going to be Alex Campbell. Mm. And a few people were like, oh, really? It's like, yeah, because that's, I like that name. Mm. And I guess it's, you know, it's one that the other half would have to consider. It's a big changing of stationery to suddenly become Alex Cat. And I'm a modern man. I even said, look, you know, I'm open to this talk about maybe if you want to double barrel it, if, you know, you want to keep yours. She's like, no, I'll take yours. It's fine. Very, you know, it's cool that we can talk about it, but I want to be Alex Campbell. Happy day.
That's nice.
Yeah, so she's changing that. I said, please keep your Twitter handle, which is at newsbooth, which I think is a great new Twitter handle. I hate for it to lose.
That's the important thing. I'll change my name, I'll change my Twitter.
Yeah, don't change your Twitter, whatever you do.
Hi, Alex Blue Sky.
But we did the thing this week. So when we do our wedding plannings, there's several stages of wedding planning for my wife to be. In the sense
at level 2-1 under what is a bitch.
Oh, fuck it. I threw the game across the room at that point. But we have like a spreadsheet with all like the costs and stuff, incoming, outgoing, and all this. Because we're destined to, we want to fund it ourselves. We want to pay for, you know, this is our wedding. This is our stupidly over-the-top wedding. So let's just, if we want to do it our way, we're going to pay our way. So the number at the bottom is always quite frightening. Mm. Because it's going down, but it's always quite frightening. So we have stages.
What, on the Excel spreadsheet? You mean yes. You're just like copying it from one cell and just dragging it down?
Yeah, it's just pushing it down so we don't have to look at it.
Now, if you look down on XXXXV...
Let's pretend it's not happening. So the stages are, right, excitement about planning, the fear that goes across her face when she looks at the number and what's coming out and when, the misery of, we can't hit that, we can't hit me going, yeah, we can, we'll do that, we'll be fine. No, we can't do it. So the stress of that, and then by the end of the night, as a point was on Thursday, we're laying in bed and she's going, this couple have a cannoli man at the wedding. We should have a cannoli man at our wedding who hands out cannolis and dance. Can we get a cannoli man? I was like, okay, you're back in the room, are you? Yeah, okay, good. No, like last time we had it, it was a helipad. We realized that the venue has a helipad.
No,
can we,
a helipad.
Can we fly in on helicopters? All right, you're back in the room now. That's fine. It's the stages of wedding planning. If
the
you're
cannoli
going
man comes via helicopter.
Who's that on the distance? Is that in the distance? It's the cannoli man! Da 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 da, what, it was Airwolf. Da 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 da
da da da da da da. Tom going to Loan Shark for his wedding. Even the Loan Shark's like, do you need the helicopter? Like, I love to break your knees, but like, come on, man.
Sonny Soprano going, hey, man, I thought the cannoli man was a bit much.
Tony starts double checks. Hey, look, Mr. Lone Shark, I'll tell you how to do your job.
It's all right, Barry knows a guy. So that's been like, this week. And you know, is conveniently one of the presenters at Radio Newcastle got norovirus. So I've had to, so this week, the week before WrestleMania, where everything's getting fucking busy, I've been working like 4 a.m. till 11 p.m. I'm like, very...
Until the break, until the dawn.
And I came in here today, because I've been fleetingly in the office because I've been all over the place, but I've been working remotely in many different places as possible. And I came in today and I just put my head in my hands. And Aiden, the cultoid.com tribal editor-in-chief, just went, it's flown by this week. I said, are you kidding? It's been the longest fucking week of my life. It's only Thursday. Fucking hell.
There's nothing to make you snap when, you know, you just, but all right, come on. You can just survive. The human heart. They've done studies on this. 5 days is when it explodes, all right? I'm on day four and a bit. I've got another 6 hours pump left in me. And the guy on the right's like, I've had a wonderful week.
Hell you. Fucking hell. Now, my next day off is Easter Sunday. I've got the whole day off Easter Sunday, and I'm excited.
Oh, just like Jesus.
Just like Jesus did. And it'll be my first day off in about 3 weeks. I'm ready for it. My body's ready for it. I'm excited. Anyway, enough about me. How are you?
I've had a wonderful week.
Oh, you fucking God.
Yeah. Basically, my mum came up. A lovely time in Newcastle. Was barely online because, you know, I was making sure that she wasn't going to break anything in my little flat. And she didn't. It's very nice. It's
I know, like, when parents come to visit your home, there's a bit like, you're worried at what they might perceive your life to be.
That's it. And it's just that meme of that hand-drawn thing of Goofy going, damn, bitch, you live like this? Because that's how my mum talks, obviously.
It's true, she does.
Yeah, she's a big kind of Goofy from the 90s. or is it Max? I can't do it, whatever. You know what I mean.
I knew who you meant.
Yeah.
Max. But she had a lovely time, though.
She did.
Nice.
I had a lovely walk around, and I got to appreciate how great my life is, that I get to sit down and talk next to my little cocaine-addicted friend here. I beg your pardon, it's part of your everyday life. It's necessary by the sound of things.
Did you hear the story this week about pollution in the water? And there was a news, I think it was Good Morning Britain, that posted the thing, and it was a vox pop from a fisherman who said, nearly every fish in this lake is full of cocaine. So I did the right thing.
Where is it? So I couldn't have eaten all of it.
I did the right thing and messaged Good Morning Britain and said, which lake were you at? Sounds delicious. But I'm glad you had a lovely
time. Fish on coke. Now, there's a fascinating idea.
Putting cocaine in the water to turn the fish.
Especially like, I don't know, like salmon or coke. What are they doing?
Fucking coke.
Nothing. Really quickly.
Often if you put your ear to the water, you can just hear happy hardcore blasted underwater. No wonder the fuckers swim upstream.
Yeah. they're doing 1080 kickflips upstream.
It's a modern mystery how salmon swim upstream. Not anymore. It's fucking not. They're off their tits on coke.
Hey, what's that 80s WF song they did that was supposed to be for tag team? Oh, Fish on Coke. Fish on Coke.
Choose life. Choose a lake near... choose a lake near the near Cumbria. Favourite story of the week.
Fish. Pump up the bass.
We're done. Good night.
And what's happening in the world of wrestling, Tom?
World of wrestling. Let's talk about fish on coke. Okay. The mailbag returns next week, by the way. We've not really been...
We hope. I mean...
Fuck it. If we're here next week, we're back with mailbag. Mailbag returns. I hope we'll... I know what I want in the bag.
What a sad message.
Only because we've not done the mailbag in ages.
Yeah, because I was sent out.
No. We've had a few, but nothing. But we've... Oh my God, mate, we've had like 110 suggestions for what Vince McMahon should be called. So are there, but we haven't officially properly punted out to say, hey, look, we do a mailbag. We need to do what they do in the radio world as a reset point. Oh, yeah. So from next week, the mailbag's returning. We're making it an official weekly feature on each of the Classic Review podcasts. It might be later on some because we've taped a few in advance. But classic@cultaholic.com, if you have questions, observations about SmackDown in 02 or anything for Math and I, this isn't too niche, doesn't go on too long. You know how I roll.
Oh, yeah, we hate that on this podcast.
If anyone's going to be long-winded, it's going to be us two, all right. classic@cultaholic.com, drop us an email. We'll do mailbag stuff next week. But we should get into the news because this is a big old week in the world of the WWE.
Just a bit, Tom.
So, this week, ahead of SmackDown on May the 9th, 2002, the World Wrestling Federation officially rebrands as World wrestling entertainment.
Ooh.
This is something that has been in the making since the 80s, pretty much. So where it was agreed upon that the Worldwide Wrestling Federation could become the World Wrestling Federation in the 80s because the World Wildlife Fund said, it's kind of our initials, but, you know, as long as you don't take the piss with it, and as long as you, this is how old this rule was in place. I think we talked about this a few months ago. It's how old this rule was in place. So they went, we don't mind you using the initials WWF as long as you don't write them in Times New Roman.
Ah.
Because that's the WWF's chosen font. Ah. So that was a rule back in the 80s. And WWF just took the piss with it, basically, and just started branding everything WWF to the point where I think the straw that broke the camel's back randomly was...
Panda's back,
was at one point there was WWF Magazine and WWF Magazine. And apparently, some people got it confused. One has animals on the front, one has wrestlers on the front. I don't know. But it led to this ongoing dispute with WWF, with the World Wildlife Fund, saying, we made a very informal agreement that you wouldn't push your luck with the WWF initials, and you are. And they'd had enough in 2001, so started proper legal action against the WWF, and they did not have a leg to stand on because they'd agreed to say, we won't take the piss with it, and they had. So the judge in the UK ruled that, actually, no, that's it. You can't be WWF anymore. You've taken it too far. So last week, WWF got all the copyrights and trademarks for WWE to rebrand as World Wrestling Entertainment. Now, the plan, and then from there, once this ruling was in place, they were told, look, you've got until the 13th of May to get rid of all WWF logos. Now, the caveat to this is they only want the scratch logos gone, because the argument is, you know, the classic chunkier WWF logo? They argue that that looks more like WF rather than WWF. The scratch logo, according to the courts, is more prominently two W's.
Is that why?
Mm-hmm. We did a whole video on this on the channel called How WWE Got the F Out.
I didn't watch it because I thought I knew everything.
Well,
look at me.
The more you know.
I was strung up like Mussolini.
So that's why the old WWF logos are still on the tagged classics, but the logos are blurred out. Because they were told, you've got to get rid of them by the 13th of May. And so that was the plan. So therefore, a brand reset was announced just before Monday Night Raw on the 6th. It was announced earlier that day in a press statement that WWF would become World Wrestling Entertainment effective of Monday Night Raw. Linda McMahon, in a statement, said this was done to further capture a greater scale of the global marketplace and to represent the growing diversity of its entertainment properties. The company's website, one of its most popular in the world, will now be found at WWE.com. It is uncertain what's going to happen with all the WWF merchandise, because obviously the scratch logo has been part of the WWF for many years, and they've just got warehouses full of WWF logo stuff that they can't blur out unless someone's in there with a fabric knife for the next 2 weeks, potentially. Because WWE was granted permission by the fund to use the initials in the United States, it shouldn't necessarily have to be destroyed, because you could probably get away with selling it elsewhere. But they've skated so close to the lightning bolt for so long, they don't want to take the piss. They just got to get rid of it as soon as they can. A new company logo was introduced this weekend. It's the scratch logo, but without the F on the end. Among the changes includes the renaming of WWF New York. So WWF New York, Dunzo. And Matthew Gregg, 3 points if you know what it's renamed as.
It's not The World then, is it?
It is The World.
Oh!
Renamed to The World.
It's our world, though.
Vague as fuck.
Because the other tarot cards, like, you know, the Tower, the Magicians, didn't really work. The World.
You could have just called it WWE New York. No.
You could call it Wimpy's for all the people that are going.
Maybe the argument is because this is a chance for them to try and brand it as something that isn't a wrestling-based property that might maybe draw more people in. If everyone goes there thinking, oh, Hawk or Holly Salad is still going to be on the menu, they're not going to be interested. Our new name puts the emphasis on the E for entertainment, which our company does best, said Linda McMahon. The press release also details...
Who knows more about entertainment than Linda McMahon?
Now, they do. It's true. She got the biggest pop in WrestleMania history, so she knows a lot about...
Yep, I stand corrected, just like her.
Yeah. Now, in the press release, they do actually reference the fact that we've just lost this big court case to the World Wildlife Fund. They continue to argue in the press release that there was no way that consumers could have mixed them up, but here we are. So there's a little bit of salt in this press statement.
Just a bit. Well, there's more to come on this episode of SmackDown, by
oh,
the way.
Oh, like, yes.
Don't think it escapes commentary. I remember the story being, I swear Vince has brought this up one time, I've definitely seen it as quoted to it in print, regarding that a World Wide Fund for Nature plane touched down and then there were a bunch of fans waiting outside because they got told the wrestlers were there. And then the panda people, that's what inspired them to go, hang on, there's a crowd full of people here. They're like, I don't know, say hello to the, oh my God, it's the head CEO of the panda. Like, what the hell?
I hope you said like a panda got
off. Yeah, a bunch of pandas got off. I mean, well, I don't know what they were expecting. But that is apparently what started it. And that's what Scott brought up and has been referenced a few times.
Well, that may have been a part of it as well. I do remember reading a story about the magazines being an element of that as well. But that sounds like something I've also read about as well. A mistake at an airport.
What the fuck is the WF magazine about?
Just like
pandas dying.
Who's your best panda?
Pandas still not fucking.
Interview with a boa constrictor. Look at. Is a dog.
We see which porn these asexual pandas dislike the least.
Hot dating tips for pandas. I mean, I'd argue there's probably more in there than what Matthew perceived Parade magazine to be.
Oh my God, that was a good episode.
I love that.
That killed like 10 minutes. Parade magazine!
Matthew thought that...
The hottest in elephants.
Matthew thought that Parade magazine was a magazine about parades. Coming up. The Macy's Day one.
Yeah. That's how I play WrestleMania.
How to blow up a really big balloon. Now,
it's nice, but will it float? Go on, Tom. Not Parade magazine again. was it Parade Weekly? That was the other thing as well. Like, how many fucking parades are there in America?
It's a light week for parades.
Barely keep up with the demand. The ever-changing world.
We think it's difficult sometimes to fill two news videos. Imagine a weekly magazine about parades. Especially during the winter.
How to stop kids picking up orange cones. Our 16-page exclusive. Anyway, sorry, Tom.
Hot inflatable action. WWE are also mandated to remove auditory references to its past life. By doing that, obviously, they are now no longer to say WWF, they have to say WWE. But this is going to be a fucking nightmare for the distribution business for WWE, for Silvervision, and for WWE Home Video, because they have to blur out the scratch logos and everything per the mandate of them. And they have to remove any mention of WWF, but they get around it by getting rid of when the wrestlers say F.
WWF.
Yeah. We've all got tag classics at home where you'll have like Ric Flair going, I am the WWF champion.
To interrupt, the tag classics by Silvervision were okay.
Oh, I stand corrected.
Thank you.
Was it
one no to get
even
mad.
The scratch logo ones?
Yeah. Because they were just re-releases of the home videos things. Weird that the ruling was made in the UK, but Silvervision were okay to do that in that format, whereas Tag... Like,
it's the anthology sets
where lots of people went, oh boy, Hogan era, untouched, absolutely fine. WrestleMania X7. You think there was just nothing but penises. The amount of fucking blurring. Even the turnbuckle pads.
The turnbuckles had the logos on there, just wipe everything.
God.
It was just like as if there were penises all over the screen.
Yeah.
So this is all happening this week. So they're just going to go, right, from Raw, boom, new logo, new start, off we go. Let's move on from this. What we could really do with is something PR-based that could just take everyone's mind off the new name and focus on that instead. And boy, howdy! Did they get that this week as well? So we have had Insurrection.
Oh, God, yeah. Mm. Right, I just realised.
We had Insurrection, the Sky Box Office pay-per-view.
No, yeah, so Jericho, calm down.
Oh, by the way, I did say I'd do a watch-along of Insurrection. I haven't had time. Sorry about that. But we'll, hopefully you'll find a way to get on with your lives. But what happened, more important than what happened at Insurrection, is what happened after Insurrection. I think that's really key to point out.
I forgot this was the same week.
The same week. In fact, the day before the announcement. On May the 5th, 2002, a number of WWF... I'll start saying E from now on.
Well, technically it was.
Yeah, it was then. But I'm going to start saying E from now on. Because
when they left, it was WWF. By the time they landed, it was WWE.
Well, by the time they landed, not many of them were any of those. On May the 5th, 2002, a number of WWE wrestlers and management members flew from Great Britain to the United States at the end of a European tour that culminated in the WWE UK exclusive pay-per-view Insurrection. This flight has become infamous due to a number of incidents involving management within WWE and the wrestlers on the roster as well. Among the incidents that occurred on this flight...
Wait, can I try naming all of them?
Okay, let's... Okay, so this is the... Now, this has been talked about yeah. on Dark Side of the Ring.
Yep.
Numerous other places. It's known as the plane ride from hell.
Yeah. Okay. See... It used to be fun because people would talk about the other cool stuff that happened. That's like, ah, a bunch of lads. And it turns out like, oh, wait, no, hang on. So the stuff with Flair.
Yes.
Sexually assault himself on a stewardess. That they then animated for the WWE story time, whatever that thing was called.
It's funny.
That they then removed.
Yeah, it's funny quickly. How times have changed because it was, so Ric Flair basically was in his robe.
Yeah, and nothing else.
And nothing apparently. Else. So then he just got his... Got his cock and balls out in front of a wait, in front of a stewardess, an air hostess, sorry. And this was animated for WWE Storytime.
Ah, like, classic.
Hilarious, classic.
They were all having fun, and then Tommy Dreamer fucked himself forever.
Yeah.
Okay, but that aside, Michael P.S. Hayes was, this is according to Sean Waltman's YouTube, was so fucked up that at one point he tried to get out of his chair and mistook even Linda McMahon for the toilet and was about 3 seconds away from pissing on her. He had to be moved. X-Pac then noticed later on he's passed out from drinking too much, so he cut his mullet and then apparently, and as X-Pac says in his YouTube, and when he did so, he did like, he teased it, everyone was watching, and he did it. It sounded like Stone Cold coming out, like in like 98, like the pop he got for it. And then he sellotaped it to one of the walls on the next episode of Raw, SmackDown, whatever it was going to be for everyone to see. All right, because X-Pac had heat with Hayes because he felt that Hayes wasn't helping the tag teams like the Hardys and Edge Christian. He was just like, go out there and do these crazy dives. And Sean was like, fuck you do it.
Yeah.
So I thought it was nice.
Michael Hayes also got into apparently a bit of physical with Bradshaw. That might have been before he fell asleep and got the mullet cut, like Samson.
I haven't heard about that. Oh, okay.
Okay,
I'm missing one.
Yeah, there was apparently a physical incident involving Bradshaw after they both had a drink with Michael Hayes. Michael Hayes allegedly punching or going to punch Bradshaw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure he
and
did.
And from there, he fell asleep after nearly pissing on Linda. From there, he fell asleep and got his hair cut.
Yeah. Goldust using the intercom to serenade Terry Runnels, his ex-wife.
Yep.
God knows what that must have sounded like.
That must have been
and
awkward.
We'll always love you.
I think it was Honey by Bobby Goldsboro that he sang. That's a hell of a reference.
Sings the wrong version of Freak Like Me. The plane's like, no, the other one. The other one. You're ruining the plane ride from hell, Goldust.
Number one in the UK. You're ruining the plane ride from hell. We've decided we're going to call it that now.
Yeah.
I love the idea of them calling it the plane ride from hell.
On the trip, they knew it was bad. Scott Hall apparently being so out of it that they had to check his pulse.
Now, according to the Ross report, Jim Ross says
it'd be
that,
great if he just said, I fucked if I know.
We'll talk.
I was blitzed.
I was fucking hammered.
Pick a barbecue sauce.
Scott, now in the Ross report, Scott Hall, Jim Ross says that Scott Hall wasn't involved in any incident other than just being like out of it and like checking his pulse. He had apparently had a lot to drink during the tour and was asleep backstage at Insurrection at one point.
Yeah, but
so that, to wake
why,
him up
why should
he
be any different from the fans watching it?
How dare you?
You're missing Funaki versus Crash Holly. Wake up, you son of a bitch.
How dare you? Paid $14.95 for that on Sky Boxes. Yeah. I tell a lie, my dad did.
Oh. Wake up. Hogan couldn't be bothered to show up. Come on. Anyway, so there's that.
Oh, also my favorite one that keeps on getting parroted around, and I just,
because as someone who enjoys reading about aviation and technology, this bit always amuses me. So Brock Lesnar and Kurt Hennig get into it, and apparently it's just a bit of play, not for real, but still. And the issue is that they brawled or grappled or whatever, just, you know, lads being lads, I guess, near the airplane door. Now, this is... Go on, you read it.
Oh, no, so basically all I've got is basically what you're saying here.
Yeah, okay. Which is, the funny thing is, it's like, it's so funny, because I guess people watch Bond films and there's like, you know, like Jason Bourne tugs on that and the door flies open. No, it's sealed. I know Brock Lesnar's a massive bastard. I know he is Mr. Perfect. I know he does a really good perfect plex. He did the giant one time on Nitro. We've all seen it. You can't just bang open the fucking door by banging against it. You have to securely, like, anyway, so...
There's a series of things that you have to do. I mean, it would have to be a very intricate grapple they were in that would open the very intricate lock on a door of a plane and force it to open.
It gets brought up all the time, and Callaholic, when they covered it, they did a little animation of them going out the plane door. It's like, they dealt with this issue in like the 20s of like, uh-oh, is it some man getting up? I say, is this the toilet? Like, not only because of the air pressure, is it supposed to be fucking sealed and pressurized, all the other stuff. Yeah, I need people not to make silly little mistakes like that. There's no chance of them falling through the fucking plane.
Whilst I agree, there is little chance, there's no chance of them opening the door, there's even less chance if they don't fight and push near the door in the first place.
Yeah, I'm sure.
There's even less chance then.
The rational of us aren't thinking that, especially if everyone's fucked out their mind.
Very true.
Like those poor fish you were talking about earlier. Seeing that, and all it takes is one or two people to go, uh-oh, we're all going to die. And the rest of them just reacted the same.
And that's what happened. It led to Finlay, Triple H, and Paul Heyman jumping in and separating them, apparently.
What's Paul Heyman going to do?
I don't know, cut a promo. Took him down. Well,
I'll bounce you like one of my checks, Henning.
No, he's like the Brock Lesnar whisper, isn't he? So he's just like, hey, come on, Brock, stop being silly.
That'll do, pig, that'll do.
Yeah, he's just there going, Henning's about to get fired. Let's get you out of this situation before anything else happens.
And I think that's all the ones I'm remembering.
You've covered it pretty much. That is the main business from the played ride from hell that occurred the day before the rebrand from WWF to WWE. Ross wrote about it in the Ross Report. He said the flight was about 7 hours in length and at times was low-lighted by a handful of people who consumed too much alcohol and acted like children whose parents were away and left the liquor cabinet unlocked. The conduct of this inebriated minority was unacceptable and will not be tolerated. Procedures have been put in place to ensure such conduct does not occur in the future. The bottom line is this. Yours truly is the person in charge of the talent roster and the buck stops with me. We will do all we humanly can to solve the problem.
Which has led many people to go, so what were you doing then?
Well, I don't know what he was doing on the plane.
Fuck all.
Probably just going, I'm writing all this down. There'll be a strongly worded email when
I land. Wait till they see my blog on WF.com. Oh, wait.
I mean, he did, when they did get, when cooler heads prevailed, when everybody was sobered up, like heads did roll, this led to the firing of Kurt Hennig with immediate effect. This whole trip, nothing that he necessarily did on the flight, but his general conduct around the trip led to the release of Scott Hall. Mm. So Scott Hall was gone from WWE the day after Monday Night Raw. A statement on WWE.com said, World Wrestling Entertainment Senior Vice President for Talent Relations Jim Ross announced today that WWE and Scott Hall have mutually agreed to end their contractual relationship.
Oh, the wording of that.
WWE wishes Hall all the best of luck in his future endeavours. I don't know about other punishments handed out because, you know, I believe X-Pac was on Raw the following week. Bradshaw was there.
No one seemed to mind. Michael Hayes getting his hair cut was like the least of that plane's issues.
Yeah, so. It's true. Everyone else pretty much gets a slap on the wrist for their misbehaviour. So Hennig, I guess the idea that Hennig should have known better.
He's the vet.
He shouldn't have been trying to goad Brock Lesnar into a fucking
That's all over
fight.
As well. It wasn't like Brock was going up to Kurt Hennig going like...
No, it was Kurt going,
Mr.
I'll
Perfect.
Have you.
He was like, yeah, Brock's probably just minding his own business and there's Ken Hennig, you know, through brewskis.
It's not like Vince McMahon would constantly try and challenge like an amateur wrestler like Kurt Angle to a fight on a plane or anywhere in public, you know.
Don't be silly, Tom.
He would surely lead by example. Fucking hell.
So... This would lead to Kurt Hennig on a very brief and unmemorable run in NWA TNA when that gets sorted out a few months' time, where he did say twice on air, he did the MasterCard advert, where, like, being a pro wrestler for 30 years, like, so-and-so money, Rhodes on the clock, this. Taking down Brock Lesnar at 6,000 feet, priceless.
Oh, fucking hell.
Like, oh, so he insists, I don't think Lesnar said anything about it, but like anything insists, he took down Brock.
And everyone's just gone, of course.
Of course you did.
Of course you did.
Prime of your life.
Yeah, there you are.
Smirnoff Ice in one hand.
Sure. There's Brock Lesnar in the main event of SummerSlam, and there you are at the Nashville Fairgrounds. Yeah, Kurt, you really won.
And then everyone cheered.
Wow. And as the diners finished their breakfast, I walked off into the sunset. Fuck me.
Wow.
Those are the big stories this week. I've just focused on them because they're the biggest stories of the week. The plane ride from hell and the brand new name. Raw was the first. On Raw this week, we had the first WWE. So we only had a few times where people accidentally said WWF. We had a few sections backstage. There's one where Booker T went into a 7-Eleven because they're pushing these. They've just released these fucking WWE 7-Eleven cups with the fucking Scratch logo on them. Yeah. So they're all over the place. That's hilarious. So there's some teething. Growing pains as you're coming away from this new name and the launch of a new ad campaign to go with it, which we will talk about because it pops up a couple of times.
Yeah, it does. It certainly does.
Let's go to Matthew for this SmackDown.
Is there any need to even carry on with the episode of SmackDown? It's all going to be downhill from here. Bloody hell. We are at the Bridgeport, Connecticut, in the Did You Drive the Car to Harvard Yard Arena.
Drive the car to Harvard Yard.
I still can't do it. Like I know that's how you're supposed to word it, but it's I just have to do a JFK impression. Slick Wagner Brown defeated the Inferno Kid in a dark match. Slick Wagner Brown would be a hot name for a few years until
everybody
found out he used to abuse April Hunter so he can go fuck himself.
Bad shout.
Jacked featured Val Venus defeating Albert, Chavo Guerrero Jr. defeating Sho Funaki, Billy Kidman defeating Christian via DQ, and Farouk defeating the Godfather, a.k.a. The Insurrection Part 2, I guess.
Got an amazing card there. It's a dark match card that sounded like the Insurrection pay-per-view.
Yes. But as Extreme once sung, if you don't like what you see here, get the F out. Yes, that's right. We open with the video of the woman cutting the F on her WF hedge, then sets it on fire, which is what the Edge versus Angle match is going to end like, presumably. Welcome to World Wrestling Entertainment, says Cole, summing up why we rarely call it the full name. New look, same falling ratings, yells Taz, but not really. World Wrestling Entertainment. It makes sense in terms of a branding thing, but you're like, you've gone from a federation, which is a company or a group of people, to an entertainment. And you're like, I don't use entertainment like that.
Yeah, so I think that's part of why, as a fan, I remember this was a real growing pain for me.
Yeah.
Because, again, you're no longer talking about a company. You're talking about what almost feels like an ideology.
Right.
And it's like, and I guess like when you look at what WWE is now, it is in keeping with that because it's the way that what WWE would become is like this global phenomenon, a brand, if you will, and that's what this would be.
Yeah.
Before it became an orphaned initial in many years to come.
Yeah, well said. And the thing with the hedge, you can see it a few times. It's very, very, very 1998.
All of these adverts they do, I think everything about this rebrand is penned by Vince, which we've got a name for him. We'll get to it in a minute. It all feels like the stuff that he was doing during the New Generation era. Where it doesn't quite, like, it feels like an old man trying to write cool hip stuff.
Also, we call it now NXT.
NXT! Because there's a couple of these adverts that we saw, we'll see them throughout the next couple of weeks, but this is the first one we see, and I think it's the first one they show on Raw as well, which is the cutting of the hedge. Interesting choice in terms of a design. I guess it's eye-catching because it's nothing to do with the wrestling, and it certainly stands out.
And I guess they can't go, that hedge, that could be mistaken for the panda people, you know.
Yeah, that's true. They're very WW. They're very much how they are about it, in the sense that they make it very clear that the old initials, despite the fact they've been the cornerstone of who they've been for decades, are just shit and uncool. Mm. And we shouldn't, as we'll find out in other adverts that air.
Yeah, and as confusing as everyone else that I seem to talk to about this. So it's E now, WWE.
WWE.
Now, people are not familiar with the alphabet. People have often said, why did they just add a little dash at the bottom of the F to make an E? And then it like
true.
That. And it said they've cut off the F. It's just WW. And I've never understood why they've done that. And surely maybe it would be an easier thing to put that on top of.
I personally think that that logo looks nicer without the F.
Also, the two lines that make the F are too high up.
Yeah.
There's a big old, yeah, maybe that.
Because they're quite high up, and therefore you'd have to, we're getting really into the granular here.
Graphic design podcast.
Yeah, as they would say. So yeah, so you'd have to move the second line down a bit.
Right.
And then make another line, which was longer along the bottom, because in theory, you'd want the them to line up to make, it makes the logo bigger.
Yeah.
Don't think it looks as aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah.
The logo that they have now and what they will go on to have, I think, is a beautifully designed logo in the sense that it fits in most places. It's easy to move into other things and it stands on its own. So I guess that's what they're hoping for. And also, by changing it to a WW, I guess it gives them an out if they want to change the name again in the future. But keep the logo.
That's a good point, yeah.
Possibly. So that's why they focus on the WW, I think. Yeah. But I thought about that. I'm pretty sure that I've got doodling pads from when I was in college, and I've probably tried to do the E logo with the scratch logo with an E, and I've even gone, didn't look right.
Yeah, maybe that
looks a bit weird. That,
especially with the lines at the bottom, the red lines are going to mix with.
Yeah, that's it.
I think we're in the weeds here. Let's go.
I quite like being in the weeds sometimes. Keeps me safe.
Here's Kid Rock's awful cover of ZZ Top's Legs, which sounds horribly mixed and made, as Stacey Keibler comes out to flex her ass.
She does.
Taz says she's hotter than a Mexican's lunchbox. If there are any Mexicans listening, how hot is your lunchbox?
It depends if you leave it in the sun.
She's here to introduce the villain this week, as we're getting the joke out early. What have we got, Tom?
So, we've been asking you, classic@cultaholic.com, to send us suggestions for what we should name he who no longer should be named in the podcast for comedy effect. And we have had hundreds of suggestions, and thank you for genuinely hundreds. Thank you. Today's comes from James Wright. James is a longtime contributor to the podcast and on Twitter. Thank you, James.
Thank you, James.
He offers us this week, a big fan of this one, Starscream from Transformers.
Oh, hell yes. Wait, he can't be the leader.
He is this week.
This is bad comedy.
I mean, we could make it Megatron, but I'm sticking with Starscream.
I like Starscream.
We've had somebody else suggest Megatron, so I'm putting a pin in Megatron for maybe a bit further down the line. Definitely seen a Megatron on our list. Seen a few Transformers in the list, actually. Yeah.
So here comes Starscream with his little crown. And you have a little... Who is it? I think it's the Destructicons doing the little trumpets.
Decepticons?
No, Destructicons. No, they're the...
I think you'll find it's ECW.
Are they Constructicons? The big green ones, anyway. This is going nowhere. Crowd chant asshole. So Starscream says the crowd is chanting things in the presence of a lady.
She's a lady!
And Taz adds, yeah, and Cole's here too. Starscream loves Stacey. She's so obedient. Which is the complete opposite to Starscream, now I think about it.
It is, isn't it?
He wishes he could clone her. Aye, so he could have infinite allegations. Starscream wonders why the rest of the Decepticons can't be like Stacey. What, and put out? Not like
that. Basically
no
what
good,
he's saying.
Not no good Triple H. Interfering in Hogan versus Jericho.
Naughty
well,
boy.
He didn't technically, as he was commentating, and Starscream must hear me, because... he says, if it hadn't been for Triple H, Jericho would have beaten Hogan, because Jericho had no issues beating Triple H a few weeks ago. Cole yells, only because Undertaker interfered. Yeah, you tell him, Cole. So Triple H will be obedient, or else.
Dun, dun, dun.
And just like in Cool Runnings, when the East German or the West German goes, oh, it's what, Jamaican. Triple H shows up to do his full entrance, so Taz and Cole are able to recite the entirety of the Dune trilogy while he slow motion walks out.
It is a long entrance this week, particularly so.
Triple H says, I can't come within 10 feet of you. Are you sure? Well, how about this? And walks towards Starscream.
So he starts off...
at one side of the ring.
One side of the ring. And he says, oh, I can't come within 10 feet. How about 9 feet? Well, that's closer than 10 feet. So, yeah, I'd say that's clearer. And he gets, like, no, about as close as I am to you. And he says, 6 feet? Yeah. I was like, mate, that's not 6 feet.
It comes nose to beak, because Starscream is a big plane.
Nose to beak, and goes, this is about 6 feet. That ain't 6 feet. You've moved too quick through the feet.
It also doesn't work because Starscream is the size of a plane, so he's at least 20 feet tall, stood up. So Triple H is like, he's yelling this, but Starscream is just hearing,
come within 20 feet
because he's 10 feet away. Is that what? How about this? And comes towards Starscream, asking how close he has to come for Starscream to destroy him. Or is everything he says bull poo, which is censored, rather like the F. Mm. Like saying an old... then he goes, yeah, everything you say is bull poo. Like thinking an old plane can satisfy a 20-year-old woman. Oh, God, this is not going good. So Triple H hits on Stacy instead, because he's a young stud. Yeah. With more lines in his forehead than on a prisoner's wall.
And Stacey's into it as well, because Stacey can't resist.
Stacey perma horny during this period, because it's 2002. Triple H makes a load of Starscream is old and bad at sex. Also has a small willy. He's a plane. Triple H threatens Starscream, and Cole says, that was a threat, I think.
This is... Now, we're at this point with the commentary where the go-to thing is for any time there's a pause in a promo for Michael Cole and Taz to go, oh, what he meant by that was... Yeah. Like, just let things fucking breathe, lads. Come on.
I'm going to kill your mother. I think that was a vague threat.
On his mother or parental unit. Tonight... He means this evening.
Yeah. Starscream ain't scared of Triple H. So Starscream runs away. And here comes what we like to call the SmackDown mid-card. You may know them from such shows as Behind Mark Henry, Bending Pans. And Behind Mark Henry, Lifting Up a Car.
It's nice to be from Behind Mark Henry this week. So it's Hardcore Holly leading the mid-carders out, as he rightly should.
Yeah, let's get them, boys.
Christian, Test, Lance Storm and Reverend Devon. And they all march to the ring and Trips beats fuck out of them for a bit.
God, no, we're doing this period now.
Oh, yeah.
Somehow, this group of men are able to get the advantage on the greatest of all time, but only briefly, and then they get back to having the advantage. Then Jericho waddles out and chair shots Triple H to bust him open before applying the Walls of Jericho while Starscream yells that Triple H will defend the title. No. There's no title, is there, Matthew?
No.
Triple H will just wrestle Jericho.
He'll just wrestle.
Judgment Day in hell in a cell. Which, like the rest of the segment, felt so forced. How about we take all the Steve Austin segments from 98, mix them together, and give them all to Triple H?
Basically.
And why don't we do a few of them at once?
So we had Trips versus the mid-card. The mid-card do get one up on him eventually because of strength in numbers.
Six of them.
Some of the mid-card were lucky enough to hit a finisher on Triple H. Now, did you notice?
Go on.
That we had a pump handle power slam from Test. Holly, Hardcore Holly, hits a running power slam. Because I reckon Triple H looked at that Alabama slam he gave Orton last week and he went, the fuck am I taking
exactly
that?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought as well.
Give me anything else. Running power slam, done.
Triple H fears Hardcore Holly.
Yeah.
Because that one match they had at SummerSlam 95.
Jericho waddling out was good fun. And then obviously, because it's all the mid-card and Jericho putting Triple H down.
There's a bit of subtlety there, do you think?
A little mid-card
and Jericho. Like, oh, I see.
Why does Starscream call it Hell in the Cell all the time? When it's Hell in a Cell.
Oh, that's his voice, isn't it?
Hell in a Cell! No. He doesn't say Hell in a Cell. He says Hell in the Cell. And I've heard Starscream on numerous occasions call it Hell in the Cell.
Hell in the Cell does sound better. Hell in a Cell. Any cell? Like a farm food cell? No, the cell.
Hell in the Cell.
Nah, I'm with Starscream on this.
My
favorite evil plane.
With you
since last week.
But all the advertising for this particular match, the branding is Hell in a Cell.
So no, I know I'm with you.
But you prefer Hell in the Cell.
Hell in the Cell, yeah. The Cell. Mm.
A or the classic at cultaholic.com. Should we have done the E on the logo? What's the deal?
Well, why are we having the mid-card come out? Never mind that. What sounds better chromatically?
Starscream leading the mid-card on Triple H. yeah, like you say, it's all of Austin's storylines just forcibly mashed together with hilarious results.
And we'll skip right to the end of like, what was something you remembered? This is one of the many times when Triple H decides to beat the fuck out of a bunch of people who were doing stuff.
Yeah.
If this isn't like, maybe the Mean Street Posse could have done something like this, or the Spirit Squad or whatever, I don't know. But right now, these are people in storylines. There's not enough roster to go around.
All in different storylines.
They're all wrestling later. Well, they all nearly appear later on and do stuff.
Mm.
Which is like, but why would you have them in this segment? To elevate Triple H, great. But then what about these lads? That's something that he's like, no, we should sacrifice all these dudes just so Triple H can look good. And again, this is going to last for a long time.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Chimal again does the accompanied by Tori Wilson from Japan bit. It has to be deliberate now. For Tajiri versus the Hurricane. Oh, but while Helms heads down the ring, Michael Cole says, "The wonderful people at the WWF and our WWF thought there might be some confusion between the companies." And Taz points out how easy it is to mix up the superstars with pandas. Yeah, that's right. That's exactly how it happened, lads. Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly what
so
it is.
So we're not seeing sour grapes here. No, we're just seeing someone who's
sour graps set up instead. Here.
Sour graps. It's nice.
Thanks. Well, it's a Fightful podcast. I've just nicked the name.
Oh, it is, isn't it? Tajiri gets the Tree of Woe, while commentators and crowd pay attention to Tori at ringside. Cole says he wouldn't be able to put up with Tajiri if he was in her shoes. Taz points out that Cole isn't Tajiri's type.
As soon as Michael Cole said, "Oh, I wouldn't put up with that if I was Tori," I could almost feel Taz going, "I've got a joke," because I get it, because I get like that sometimes. I've got a joke!
Yeah.
I've got a joke!
They're blending so well together, these two.
Yeah, they were good this week. Good bands this week.
Handspring elbow connects, but Tajiri gets sent outside. Tori checks on her lad, but he tells her to piss off. So Helms is able to launch a plancha. Do you launch a plancha? Have I misspelt land? I have.
Well, you launch into a plancha.
Whee, says Helms.
A whee!
Kasplat is the caption that comes up.
Who's Helms, by the way? I only see the Hurricane.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry about that. Tajiri isn't going to sell bad weather. He's from Japan. They deal with tsunamis and earthquakes all the time. Bit inappropriate, Matthew. We'll move on. So he kicks Helms some more before setting up the kick to the head. But Tori has had enough and sheds her gear on the announce table, like in Fighting Vipers, to enable Helms to Hurricane to win via countout. Then Hurricane chokeslams Tajiri post-match to remind people he was in this match. So yeah, there's a weird thread here of those women shouldn't wear big outfits. They don't want to do that. It's against women's rights. They should do what they want. which is bikinis all the time.
Basically, and no, lingerie, as it was on this occasion.
Lingerie, of course, yes. I know the difference.
Fun match, though.
It was just a backdrop for Tori.
Yeah, and she got the biggest pop of the night for finally throwing down the geisha attire. Now, when I watched this, my school of thought was, initially, was that a finish in error? The count out? Because that felt like a good point to take the title off Tajiri. To have her throw down the shackles of oppression and then have Tajiri get a choke slam from Hurricane and pinned for the title. Move the title across.
I don't think there's anything for Hurricane.
Really? I thought it was...
You needed Tori to help you win? You're supposed to be a superhero.
I mean, there is that. But I thought it... Because he hit the choke slam on Tajiri. And I think I said to you last week, I said it should be a case of he hits the choke slam. The moment he hits the choke slam, he wins the title.
I think, again, I love you sticking to your guns there. It's like, I think the Hurricane, it was when he was going to hit it on dudes way bigger than him. There's no shock when he hits a choke slam on Tajiri.
It is if everybody...
A man's much smaller than him.
It is if everybody's countering it, Your Honour. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury.
I rest my case.
I rest on your face.
No, Tom, this is clearly setting up, as any idiot can tell you, Tori versus Tajiri for the Cruiserweight title.
Of course it is. My bad.
Get with it. Backstage, Starscream decides to make Triple H compete tonight. Who should he wrestle? Oh, his brother Devon. Maybe he can help. Starscream says, if Triple H refuses to wrestle him, then Starscream can fire him. Why would he refuse to wrestle him? He just beat him and eight other guys up.
I'm
sure the only reason Triple H would be shitting himself is because of too much bruising berries slurpees from 7-Eleven. As presented by RVD or something.
So this is the advert for the Slurpee Cups for WWE have with 7-Eleven, in which the advert is Rob Van Dam stopping some little geek from going to the machine. He's like, hey, kid, you want the Rob Van Dam cup? And the kid's like, nah, I want the Rock cup. Mm. Ha, you're a dick. Hey, kids, here's the Rob Van Dam cup. Can we talk about...
You're emoting way too much to be impersonating Rob Van Dam in these segments.
That's true, actually. Can we talk about, though, how fucking weird it looks to have Rob Van Dam in his singlet with jeans over the top?
It's so great.
It's a look. It's a look. It's a look that... I think Renee Paquette wears something like that now. In the sense that she'll have jeans or bottoms on, but with like a one piece, like a
Fun of the Pirates
singlet type affair. Oh. So they're quite popular now. So you kind of have like, you see where the singlet goes in and there's like a low ride on the jeans. That's kind of a fashion thing at the moment. And I've seen Renee Paquette wearing it a few times. I've seen Deonna Purrazzo wearing it a few times. And I thought that's what Rob Van Dam was going for here. That's my story.
Nod, smile.
That's my story.
Backstage, Al Snow. You know what, Tom? What you just said is more sophisticated than this next segment.
Thanks, babe.
Backstage, Al Snow congratulates Hurricane on a victory. Al's wearing a Spider-Man shirt, as that film has just come out in USA, but not UK. So Hurricane points out he could beat up Spider-Man easily, and everyone should wear a Hurricane shirt instead. Hurricane notices a note for him. And you know it's for him because it's labelled Hurricane. And someone says they know who he is. Hurricane thinks it's that jealous Peter Parker and flies off to investigate, doing their nyow thing as he jumps off camera.
I think it's you writing that note.
And
you've been calling him Helms all show.
What are you talking about? No.
I think it's you's written it.
No. And Al says he thought it was bad when he had to talk to a head. No pop. Al was way too smug here for any of this to really work. But this was decent, even if the crowd didn't give a shit.
No, I enjoyed it. It's doing stuff with the mid-card lads that isn't getting fed to Triple H.
That is what I like.
Yes.
Al Snow avoiding getting beaten up by wearing a Spider-Man shirt. It's 11. Okay, so here comes... It's Tess versus Mark Henry. Cole says... I call Tess... Doubting Tess, like doubting Tom, because he didn't think Henry could do any of the things he said he was going to do. Oh, but what the fuck is a doubting Tom?
And I had to Google it. I'm so glad you asked.
Thank you. A doubting Thomas is a skeptic who refuses to believe without direct personal experience. A reference to the Gospel of John's depiction of the Apostle Thomas, who in John's account refused to believe the resurrected Jesus had appeared to the 10 of the apostles until he could see and feel Jesus' crucifixion wounds.
There you go. That's what a doubting Thomas is. It's such an old terminology. If there was ever any doubt that Starscream was still on the mic backstage going, call him a doubting Thomas! Kids love doubting Thomases! Sing Tiptoe Through the Tulips!
Starscream, there are enemies approaching.
Who is it? Is it Optimus?
No.
Don't tell me it's doubting Tom! I will defeat you, doubting Thomas!
I don't think you will.
That's good. He transforms from a doubter to a full believer. That's bullshit. Let me feel your wounds. It is Jesus. Anyway, here's Mark Henry with his Get the Fuck Out shirt. That would have made him a main eventer in 02 if he just, like, he had that written and just yelled it.
Now, normally wearing a WWF t-shirt is, or WWE t-shirt as it is now, is a harbinger of doom. If you wear like the pay-per-view t-shirt, that normally means it's like being a red shirt being beamed down in Star Trek.
Yes.
But this is for a rebrand? Does Mark Henry get a pass on this one?
He's the biggest dude on the roster, so it makes sense for him to wear it because everyone can see it.
Yes.
Very clearly.
But they get lugs sometimes advertised on Mark Henry.
Tess can't get over how strong Henry is. Neither can the commentators who talk about Triple H. I put, get used to this. Henry catches Tess the crossbody but misses the strong splash. Tess misses the big boot and Henry press slams him, there we go, to pin after the big splash. No, it's not a pin, Matthew. Tess gets his foot on the rope. Well, I thought it was going to be the finish. Tess instead lands the big elbow off the top rope, but that doesn't work either. They're going hard tonight. Tess escapes the full Nelson by thumbing the ref and low-blowing Henry before the boot puts away Henry. Hey, they worked really hard here. 2001 test. He's still here.
I thought this was good. This was good fun. I thought this was going to be the blow-off, to be honest, for their feud. But no, the feud must continue.
Yes.
Between Test and Mark Henry. The beat kicks.
Yes.
And we don't stop rocking.
Ah. Christian, backstage, is so happy that his mate won. He tells Angle he's so happy as well because earlier tonight, he beat up Triple H. Angle's skeptical. Doubting Kurt, they call him.
Doubting Kurt, they call him in my house.
Angle has his new shirt that you may have heard about. Christian says he can't wait for that hair match at Judgment Day because Edge said he had a childhood fear of being ugly. Angle says, yeah, after this pay-per-view, Edge will be the ugly one of you two. Christian isn't like that. Kurt doesn't see the issue. What? Angle says he's going to show him bald tonight because Christian can't wait for Judgment Day. Another lovely segment between these two.
Yeah, these two are good fun. And it's a little tease of what's coming up with Angle in a bit. And yeah, I like, they're both a bit geeky, both a bit goofy, but they're perfect together. Yeah. I thought we'd see more Christian and Angle tag team stuff in the wake of the Edge and Christian split. But no, it's mainly Angle and Jericho. But I don't think an Angle and Christian thing would have been good.
Angle is the one-man federation.
It is.
The one-man entertainment, as they say now. Backstage, some annoying dude interviews Chuck and Billy. He brings up the tag team champions getting de-pantsed. Ha ha, we got to see your gay athletic bodies. Ha ha, how embarrassing. Then Rico took Rikishi's ass to the face. Okay, that is actually embarrassing.
That is.
Billy yells that Rico had to have 20 facials to get rid of the stench. So Rico says tonight, he's coming out. As only he can, by kicking ass. I put, yeah, that'll happen.
20 facials?
I'll put, wait for Tom to say a Wembley joke.
Fuck.
Yes.
I'm not going to know. Because you called it.
Tom just binned two pages. No, Tom, put them in the recycling. No, Tom, you'll need those notes to clean up the jizz that's going to merge. Because...
Oh, that's that page!
Because it is the completely inauspicious debut right now. The TV debut of Dave Bautista.
Yeah!
As Reverend Devon talks to an arm backstage.
Hello.
And that's the teaser as we lead it to the break and afterwards.
But they did a thing earlier because, if I'm right, I think in the segment earlier, Vince even teased this. Sorry, Starscream even teased this going, is he here? And we thought he was talking about God, but really, he was talking about Drax.
Oh, I thought he meant God as well.
Is he here? And Revenant's like, oh, my brother, he's here. They meant him.
Devon's like, he's everywhere.
It's good, innit?
Yeah, anyway.
It's good, innit? I like that.
Devon's first theme is just church music, by the way. I remember the much better, like, Reverend Devon, where it's got the organ.
Yeah.
This has got an organ as well. I'm not doing a very good job explaining this.
He's strong within.
That's
I want to hear you.
That's it.
Because that was the one they used in the SmackDown game. That's probably why it resonates with you. Mm. So if you do like the career mode in that SmackDown game with Reverend Devon, for some reason he pops up in it loads. He's in it a lot as Reverend Devon.
He's everywhere.
He's everywhere.
And who is this Leviathan that's with Devon?
Mm.
In an ill-fitting suit with no sleeves and the big money box round his... Ooh, okay. Devon does God stuff that the crowd doesn't care for because they're all heathens, I guess. But says, here's the guy to protect the Devon Building Fund, Deacon Batista.
Here he is! Now, first look ever at one of the future Hall of Fame stars of wrestling in Batista. I thought he looks like David Draymond here from Disturbed.
He's not far off. Very, very O2.
Muscly. The Observer writes fantastically dismissively, Devon introduces new bodyguard, Deacon Batista, who may have been Dave Batista, brackets Leviathan, or Barry Buchanan, or Damager Danny Holly, as he was tall and bold, I'm guessing Leviathan.
Again, Dave
dismissive.
Used to be funny.
Yeah, I love it, I love it. A little bit of fact finding about our new boy?
Oh, go on then.
Go on then. David Bautista, born in Washington, D.C., the son of Donna Ray and David Michael Bautista. His mother's of Greek descent. His father is the son of Filipino immigrants. His paternal grandfather served in the Philippine military, and he was also a taxi driver and a barber to keep his family roofed and homed. Bautista had quite a rough old upbringing, though. He was exposed to a lot of crime at an early age. He was stealing cars at the age of 13. Was Dave. By 17, he was estranged from his parents and he was living on his own. He basically found his way back to them, but he was a nightclub bouncer when he was around 19 and he got arrested after a fight that left two of the patrons of the nightclub injured. He was sentenced to a year of probation, which he worked as a lifeguard, and then he pursued a career in bodybuilding. And he says, that saved my life, basically. It gave me some focus and got me into the shape I was in then. He decided to give the old wrestling thing a lark and turned up at the power plant.
That's right.
Which Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker turned to him and said, you're never going to make it in this business, kid. Now, it's easy just to go, lol. But Dave was coming into it a bit later than most do. So, like, he was, like, I think he must have been early 30s, late 20s, early 30s, which is quite a late bloomer in wrestling to be at that point. And so therefore he went, look, you're not going to pick this up quick enough and it's not going to happen. However, he then went to the WWF. He found some contacts within there and they advised him to go and train with Afa Anawayi at the Wild Samoan Training Wrestling School. And that was where Afa and his team found the best in Dave. And it led to him going over to OVW. And he was training. Also, while he was with Afa, he was training in Muay Thai and Eskrima, which are mixed martial arts.
I don't even know that second one.
I'm not familiar with it, but I know about Dave's background with Muay Thai. So he joined OVW in 2000, and they liked the look of him a lot because he's a big boy. He became OVW heavyweight champ within like a year and a bit. He lost the belt back in February, just ahead of his debut on the main roster. And that brings us to where we are today. I have another Dave Batista anecdote, but I'll give you that at the end of the talk about the match.
Oh, what a tease.
Oh.
Yeah, he has. I've seen a brief snippets of his book where he just shits all over Buddy Lee Parker.
Yeah, was not very kind to Dave. Mm. And it's one of those where it's a real. It's easy to look back in hindsight and go, "What were you thinking?" This lad walked in, you said, "Nah, you ain't gonna make it."
Yep.
But you know, you don't know the full story of what was there. But you do if you read Dave's book.
Mm-hmm.
At least you know Dave's side.
Anyway, Taz looks at him and says, "Wow, they must have some good gyms at church." Yeah,
I like that line. That was good.
And that's Dave making his TV debut. against Triple H on the very first episode of WWE SmackDown.
Mm.
Wrestling has a lot of funny foreboding moments, doesn't it?
It really does. It really does. Yeah. The first person on WWE TV that Dave gets physical with is Triple H.
Yeah. Triple H pretends to be selling the beating and blood from earlier, but he still runs to the ring and immediately batters D-Von, so good job. D-Von comes back with a stun gun of all things. The move on the ropes, but not the actual object, but that would have been funny. Batista gets a few shots in at ringside. Crowd doesn't care about any of this, possibly because D-Von was there in the opening bit getting beat up. Like an old car, there's no tension. Batista prevents Triple H from getting a chair, but then runs into a steel post because he's dumb. But Batista distracts the ref. Jericho nails the very large and heavy money box at Triple H's skull to help D-Von get the win over Triple H. That did nothing for him. Cole says, that donation box is supposed to be for God's work, but for now, it's Jericho's work. Oh, God.
Yeah.
I thought even Doubting Thomas is skeptical about that one. Jesus, Cole.
So it took five mid-carders, Jericho, a cheap shot, and a Batista to keep Triple H down for 3 seconds.
Wow.
What a guy.
Yeah.
So D-Von reflects on this match on Insight with Chris Van Vliet. In particular, talks about working with Batista for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I remember Dave didn't know anything. For instance, we did a spot in the match with myself and Triple H where I threw Triple H to the outside and distracted the referee. Hunter would be getting up, leaning against the post, and Batista sees him, does the sign of the cross and goes to clothesline him. But Hunter gets out of the way and Batista hits the post and goes down. I remember Batista had come to me and said, Rev, I've got to ask you a question.
Rev, that's so nice.
He says, what's up? He says, how do I do this? And I go, how do you do what? He goes, with Hunter. And he goes, Batista, what are you talking about? He goes, how do I clothesline him when he moves out of the way and then I hit the post? He's like, and I go, you're messing with me, right? He says, no, I'm not. You've never done anything like this. He says, no, at OVW, all they had me do was come in and do run-ins because I was so massive. And they never really worked with me the way that they did with Brock and Randy and Cena. I was just the guy that came in and nailed people and that was it. So he was like, you know this thing I've got to do? I don't do it. Oh, shit.
And all he's literally doing is doing the sign of the cross and then running.
Yeah. That bit that you saw, if you watch this episode, that bit that Batista saw, bless him, he was backstage going, fuck, I ain't got a clue. Shit, this is beyond my expertise.
Oh.
I know. And it's, we look back on that and we forgive it so much because Dave went on to be fan-fucking-tastic.
Yeah.
Really did. I think it shows that there is, like, everyone, it's easy to... And this means more to me than it ever has. It's easy to rule out older people for doing these things, going, oh, because in the moment you show anything that isn't perfection, they go, oh, well, you're no good for it. Well, no, just sometimes give us a little bit of time to cook and we'll get you there. And Batista did, and look at him now. He's a fucking megastar.
D-Von, the Rev took him and goes, look, you press down C to start a run, and then B, and you're near him.
I missed him, but I've somehow got the level selected, Sonic 1.
I've lost my spirit meter. Just keep on taunting.
Taunt. Touch the cross.
Yeah. Deacon Batista just can't stop doing the cross at ringside.
Deacon Batista is an animal. Deacon Batista.
That's like, wow, I realised the whole God thing, huh? Kurt is here. As Cole points out, Kurt will be getting a proper haircut if he loses. Not like the buzz cut he has now. Taz immediately takes offense and goes, that's a normal haircut. Cole has a stupid cut. Cole says Taz is nearly bald. Taz says, hey, it's a choice. Oh, they're getting it. They're getting it, these two. Kurt explains what Edge will look like bald. And it's, yes, surprise, surprise, the Brian Goodworth special, dodgy photoshops. Oh, we haven't had these in ages. He shows Edge bald. Then does it again. He goes, oh, you know what? I love seeing this image of Edge with no hair, bald, looking like the dude from Scream.
It's a weird look for him, isn't it?
It really is. He goes, you know what? I love it. I like that so much. Let's see it again. Angle turns his back and mocks him. Ha ha, look at that stupid dog looking stupid. And of course, he turns around and it's a Photoshop of Kurt. And Kurt's like, whoa, you... Kurt's really mastered the art of turning around and saying dumb stuff and turning back around and be like,
he's really good, isn't he?
You think you're so smart and good looking? Well, let's see how the women look at you when you're bald and ugly.
Speaking of bald and ugly, here's Hulk Hogan. Hogan shows up and says, "You got a problem with bald people, brother?"
This caught me off
and
guard.
I thought, he said it. Like, he says, Billy Graham, he's bald. Steve Austin, he's bald. And, oh yeah, me. And takes his do-rag off. You didn't used to be able to say that.
You can't,
Hogan's going to sue himself. Hogan says, if Edge doesn't get you at Judgment Day, then Mother Nature will. Crowd loves Hogan spitting.
Brilliant.
Kurt says he hopes Undertaker beats up Hogan real good, and if he doesn't, then Kurt will take his title anyway. Hogan sends Kurt the real American packing, and as Kurt runs, Edge spears him on the entrance way, and commentators seem to miss it, though, for some reason. I don't know. There's no reaction from them whatsoever. So
no,
maybe
they just...
Maybe they legitimately didn't see it.
It was weird, because they overreact to everything. So to underreact this spot was weird.
Yeah, I think they look at their notes going, well, there goes Angle. So what's up next? And then just, I don't... Edge spears him and no one says it.
It's so weird. But it's a spot they'll use a lot in packages and stuff. Yeah. Build to this
feud. It's supposed to be recorded.
There's no reason. Whatever. But I guess they just gone, do you know what? We'd have to get Michael Cole and Taz back in the studio for the sake of adding a line. Fuck it, just leave it as it is.
Also, it's... Yeah. To just give a bit of background, you didn't used to be able to say... Hogan was bald.
Yeah.
On microphones, on promo pictures, on one of the video games, allegedly, there's a... it's one of the ones that's out now, I think. One of the ones that's out for the PlayStation 2 or the GameCube, I forget which one. There's a picture on the back of Hogan not with his do-rag on. Apparently that caused some issues.
Oh.
Because Hogan was not allowed to be shown without a do-rag in the games.
Wow.
But here he is going, I'm bald.
That's interesting. I mean, I've heard that his hair's a touchy issue because obviously to this day he's got like the do-rag on with like, you know, those little frilly bits at the end of curtain rails.
The dry spaghetti
on the bottom.
Yeah.
So he's obviously got an issue with it. But like here, I love the fact that he owned it and was slapping his own head and rubbing Kurt Angle's head. Yeah. I like this bit.
Yeah.
Great.
It's like, wow, they're really getting Hogan to do stuff that he wouldn't have done.
And also, I looked at that and I remember as a kid watching that bit and going... Oh, that's interesting.
Mm.
American Heroes.
Mm.
There's a thing. It's a thing that we get. Not yet, though. Ooh. Not yet. Let it cook. Mm.
12 Stones Broken is the official theme for Judgment Day.
I'm broken.
As WWE is apparently making up new metal bands now. this band would later do We Are One. The theme for The Nexus.
They would indeed.
We Are One.
They did the soundtrack as well to Bad Blood 2004, which was the Triple H Shawn Michaels Three Stages of Hell match that went on. Or is it Hell in a Cell that went on for an hour?
In 04. Oh.
Yeah, they headlined Bad Blood 04.
It feels like you're going through the Three Stages of Hell. Like Dante, because that match never ends.
It's a really long match. It needs to be as long as it was.
There's also Benoit Kane.
That was on Backlash. No,
Backlash.
It was Bad Blood.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I remember 12 Stone doing the soundtrack to the Triple H Shawn Michaels match in particular.
There were many good new metal bands but WWE would seem to find the dullest to soundtrack their shows.
But the thing that he's most famous for, him from 12 Stone, is something he's not credited for, which is, you know, Evanescence, Bring Me to Life.
Yeah.
All of this side, I can't believe I couldn't see.
That's him.
I'm in the front, but you were there in front of me. That's
what?
Him.
Oh.
Tom knows his new metal.
Bring me out there. Can't wake up.
From 12 Stars.
12 Stars.
12 Stones, sorry.
In the Tokyo Dome.
In Tokyo Dome.
Backstage, Kurt Angle is mad. He wants Hogan. No, he wants Edge. No, he wants Hogan. Starscream's like, calm down, mate. Starscream uses his powers of being the Decepticon leader to make a tag match tonight with Chris Jericho. Okay, that's it. Nice, simple segment.
Easy.
Nice to see some actual tag teams. Speaking of which, whoop. Billy and Chuck and the guy who's coming out tonight, Rico, walk the ring. They are presented to you by a bunch of sponsors, but I'm going to point out one. Panasonic's eWear, which is represented by a logo of the Panasonic logo, and Taz saying, that's how they sell this. And I'm like, what the hell is this? So I had to go find out what Panasonic's eWear was. I forgot. It was an iPod competitor because there were so many other companies trying to be MP3 players during this time.
I found a review. I was looking forward to purchasing this MP3 player ever since I saw it at the CES show in January. I rarely get excited about overpriced, just-released electronics, but everything I read about this made me want it, badly. From its tiny dimensions and lightweight to the included jogging strap, I was all over it. Plus, it uses those cool little secure digital memory cards that will also be compatible with the new Nintendo GameCube. So I figured I couldn't lose. Spoilers from advance. No, it's not true. But then after receiving the player only days after it went on sale, my feelings of excitement turned first to disbelief, then frustration, and finally, absolute hatred for this device. Initial impression, as soon as I opened the delivery package, my disappointment began, because it's powered by Real Jukebox. No, I thought. No, no, no. Please let it be a mistake. This wasn't mentioned anywhere on Panasonic's website or in any of the previews I'd read. Real Jukebox? Talk about software that colonizes your computer. The real family line of software is like a legal virus. But since there was nothing I could do about it, I decided to give it a go and not make any judgments quite yet. You deserve every bad thing that happens to you.
Yes,
in life,
you
mate.
Do. That is on you, that is. Using
yeah. Real Jukebox. So yeah, it had Real Jukebox, which kind of killed it. And also the iPod just devoured everything.
It was. I remember that point. I think I must have been either about to work or start working at HMV, because HMV attempted to get into that racket as well with their HMV MP3 players. And they were fucking shite, because you had to get a subscription to HMV Music in order to play them. And it was $9.99 a month. You downloaded the songs. You downloaded the songs exclusively onto this HMV Music MP3 player and nowhere else.
Oh.
If your subscription lapsed, all the songs got wiped. You had to plug in your MP3 player at least once a month, otherwise it would become scrambled.
That's what they want to do now. Like in 02, that's insane.
Yeah, they were shit. And it was the fact that people come and ask for an iPod, and we were told, push them towards the HMV MP3 players. And we're like, but they're shit. Eventually, HMV saw the light of day and went, let's just start selling iPods.
I forget the one I had, because that's how bad it was, but the sound quality was appalling. And you had to convert them to another file format. Everyone just seemed to go like, okay, we need to do it differently. Like,
yeah.
No, they've got it right first time with this.
I had one that had a little screen on it in 02. And it could play like, it played like very low quality video, so I could watch like episodes of Aqua Teen Hunger Force on it.
As was the style
Space,
at the time.
Space Ghost, as was the style at the time. Good times.
Yeah. Anyway, they're taking on Al Snow, Maven, and Rikishi. Cole brings up all the facials Rico needed last week. Do a Tom joke about.
Till I've ripped them all up.
If not, don't read here.
I've written
them all. Well, I'm glad I put that bit there. Al starts and goes for Chuck's tights like a hungry man who hasn't eaten in a while. And he's only doing it because Chuck is gay.
Get it?
It's okay to go gay for gays, but not be gay.
It's okay to be gay.
Oh, God, that song. I was one of those bromosexuals you read about. I'm not gay. I just love making out with my best friend. Kishi cleans house. That's nice of him. Billy blocks the Kishi ass with a bulldog. And Billy takes the Rikishi cell from Rikishi because it's only polite. Rico gets a few kicks in to show off his black belt skills as Taz makes a joke about him coming out. Taz is full of caffeine here. He won't stop singing and making fun of Cole's lack of style. Al makes a comeback with the not sky high, then Kishi beats up everyone as Rico looks scared of him. Rico sits down the corner after a Maven shot and the crowd go wild as they know, it's time for ass! But Chuck takes him out, allowing Billy to land the famouser to pin Al, who may or may not have been legal. This was all right. The fans really like Billy and Chuck.
Yeah,
getting beat up.
I enjoyed this match. It was fun. It was a good fun 6-man tag. It continues to show the massive hole in the tag division when you're putting these matches together like this, with Al Snow and Maven still in the mix for a tag title shot. It shows you the holes in the division. But I thought this was a fun 6-man tag.
Exactly. Hey, it's Randy Orton with a crap interviewer dude whose name is Mark.
Why are we giving so much shit to Mark Lloyd?
He's rubbish.
He's great.
Just because you met him once.
I never met him.
Do you not?
Never met Mark Lloyd.
How do you know his name?
Because I watch SmackDown.
Every time I see him on SmackDown, I have to Google, who the fuck's this?
Oh, bless him.
Bless him. He's rubbish.
He's
just a dude.
He doesn't do anything that gets in the way. He's fine.
He blocks the shot every time.
He doesn't block the shot.
I can't
see
the background.
He doesn't...
He's off his mark. Oh. Anyway, we see Randy Orton's win against Hardcore Holly, and then the Alabama Slammer that Triple H was too scared to take on the entrance last week. Ow. Randy points out, yeah, pain hurts, but his dad says you got to move on and get on with your life. Lance shows up to yell about Randy being handed everything, while Lance, one of the greatest Canadian athletes, has been reduced to betting on Mark Henry's pans. And I'll put, don't forget getting beat up by Triple H. So Lance wants Orton tonight. False promo aside, at least there's some logic here, so I'll allow it. Because it literally was Randy going, oh yeah, that hurt, but you know, my dad says you got to man up. And Lance Storm's like, oh, your dad. Well, let me tell you about your dad and everything you mean. It's just like, oh, okay, calm down, mate.
I thought it was fine. It's just funny seeing this sort of humble Randy Orton in these backstage bits. Yeah. He's like, oh, my dad thinks I'm all right. I was like, oh, mate, no. Bless you.
Then we get a recap of Raw. I wonder why they didn't lead with this. Oh, I remember why. You may or may not have seen this already.
I have.
It's Hulk Hogan with Undertaker's bike. Yes, it's the one where Hogan steals Undertaker's bike, takes it to ringside, but can't rev it up the ramp in front of the live crowd. It stalls and stalls and stalls. It looks like an MVP push. I thought I'd get a better reaction. Fuck off, Tom.
What's MVP?
MVP push.
Yeah.
No, that's one of them. Eventually, Hogan.
I don't know why we just throw shade at MVP out of
nowhere. No, it's just because like they wouldn't push him. That's why you laugh, Matthew.
If
it's,
you
it
said
terrible.
A test push, I'll give you another run up.
It stalls and stalls and stalls. It stalls so much you think it was a test push. That's actually me pressing play on my Panasonic eWare. .m4u file that plays an audio of Tom laughing hysterically.
Just now,
my PC's fucked.
Yeah, now your PC's fucked because real jukebox has taken over.
Eventually, Hogan gets it up, and drives it around before deciding to run over Undertaker's bike with an 18-wheeler. Because, you know, every arena's got one. Undertaker is mad. Hogan! Yes, that's how people remember that bit. Yeah, so live.
Shit.
On Monday Night Raw, which is live every Mondays, I guess you haven't heard, Hogan just kept installing it, and it would not go up. And Undertaker had to stand at the top of the ramp going, don't you come up here, Hogan. And he'll go, bop, 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 bop. No, Hogan, don't you come up here. Bop, 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 bop. And everyone in the crowd going, oh, fuck, fabulous. Oh, fuck.
It's fabulous. I love it. I love any time Undertaker's bike lets us down.
So great. And there'll be an even funnier bit next week.
Oh, fuck yeah, that's next week, isn't it?
Come on. Anyway, Stacker 2 presents Tori getting her norks out.
Excellent.
Stacker 2.
Norks.
Randy Orton versus Lance Storm is next. But there's no ref. Oh, wait, yes, there is. It's Hardcore Holly.
Hey, Michael Cole says, I think Mr. McMahon had something to do with this. And Taz went, fucking shut up. No, he didn't.
Shut up with your stupid haircut.
Stupid fucking
your mindless accusations.
He fucking didn't, you prick.
You get libeled, you goon. Holly stops Randy from attacking Lance in the corner, so Lance gets a cravat, of all things. Mm. Lance yells, you're a bum. Cole points out Holly isn't trained as a ref. Taz points out it's good to have a jacked, fit ref from time to time. It's a good point, actually.
It's true.
Holly counts Randy.
It's just him and Shane Sewell.
Randy and Lance are on the top rope, with Randy Orton kind of falling off to send Lance into the ring. Didn't look good, but whatever. He's young. A crossbody doesn't end it because Holly can't count. Lance gets a single grab, but Holly holds the ropes away from Randy so he can't grab them, and he is forced to tap out. Holly and Lance beat him up afterwards, but it's okay, because Val Venus saves the day. Because 1998 is getting pushed forever. Actually, the last bit is true. Mm-hmm. This match was everything you'd think it would be if you shut your eyes and imagined it yourself.
That might be my favourite description you've ever given a match. This is everything you thought it would be if you shut your eyes and imagined it yourself.
Yeah, hang on, let me guess what happened. Yeah, there he is.
Yeah. Yep. You could have literally just had someone read that result on the ramp and then leave, and you could have saved 10 minutes on the show.
Yep.
But you know what? Hey, look, it was fine. It was a lot of stuff on here this week. It's just fine.
Yes.
Yeah, Holly doing the slow count on Randall Keith was good. And then the little push of the rope away from Orton as he went to reach it. Well, that's nice. And it's a tap out. And it's Lance Storm tapping at Randy Orton.
Yes, he gets to brag about that forever.
Yeah, not a lot of people remember the fact that this is the night where D-Von pins Triple H and Lance Storm submits Randy Orton.
That's crazy.
Evolution is a mystery. Yeah.
If only there hadn't been some daft thing at the start, like Triple H beating them all up.
I mean, yeah, there is that. Ugh. There is that.
But yeah. Edge backstage sees Hogan's gear and marks out. Oh boy. He puts on Hogan's gear and does a mocking promo of himself. Mm-hmm. Like, we're going to do the biggest up, second biggest, some decently meaty arms. Run wild on you, brother. Then Hogan shows up and Edge freezes. Hogan demands his feather boas and cuts the promo properly on Edge. Edge thinks it's cool. They both walk off together. You know, I don't like it nowadays. I say nowadays, last, I don't know, 6-7 years, when the superstar has to mark out for the legend. But it was okay when Edge did it because he was already a bit nerdy anyway.
And Edge has said like he was a fan of Hulk Hogan growing up. So that was just a nice bit for Edge, really.
And right
you
now,
felt with, you were there with him going, yeah, that's cool.
Right. And right now with Hogan's push, a lot of the crowd are going, yeah, we're with you. I'd love to cut a promo. I'd love Hogan to cut a promo on me.
It reminded me of that video that surfaced last year from Hogan's shop in Tampa, in Clearwater, where the little kid comes in dressed as Hogan and he cuts and Hogan goes, let me tell you something, brother. And then this little kid does his perfect Hulk Hogan impression and then every face just pops. Aye. It's great.
Right down to racism.
Right down.
This sets up Hogan and Edge taking on Jericho and
the kid wasn't racist, by the way.
Yeah, he was. Little bastard. Check his hard drive. Hogan starts by no-selling Kurt's punches. Wait, he's doing the comeback already? Taz yells, this isn't his first barbecue. Taz throws the do-rag at Kurt and continues to beat him up as we're doing this match out of sync. So thankfully, Edge comes in. Jericho kicks away at Edge while he has that disgusted look on his face. Jericho chokes Edge with the tape from his wrist, but Kurt tags in so him and Edge can double crossbody. Jericho tries to stop Edge, but after an enziguri, Hogan gets the hot tag, and I mean hot.
Mm.
Hotter than his tan. Hotter than a Mexican's lunchbox.
There it is.
To quote a phrase. Big boots and knockers all round. Jericho tries punching Hogan, but here's the Hulk up. Crowd ooze along with the big boot leg drop combo, but Kurt yanks the ref out the way before the match can end. So Edge lands the big DDT on Kurt, enabling Jericho to lock the walls on Hogan. But here's Triple H with a sledgehammer.
Indestructible, indestructible, indestructible. Master of War.
Triple H inexplicably attacks Jericho and Kurt.
Well, not inexplicably.
Then Edge and Hogan and the ref. What?
Well, the first two made sense, the others didn't.
Yeah, I should have done that and then say inexplicably attacks everybody else. What the fuck kind of finish is that? I've typed here. Or it mistyped because I was angry. Vince Starscream shows up and goes, why'd you hit me with that sledgehammer, Megatron? If you do, it'll be the last thing you ever do. Starscream goes to hit... No. Vince goes to hit... Whatever. Starscream goes to the apron. Triple H goes to hit him.
Sledgehammer.
But Starscream ducks, which is really hard for a 30-foot plane. So Jericho hits him with a chair to end the show. Triple H is not Austin. Triple H is not Austin. Triple H is not Austin.
I think you'll find he is. And they're speed running Steve Austin stuff, which is why like it's a very Austin thing just to run out and nonchalantly beat up the baby faces and the heels during a match. They are speed running Steve Austin through Triple H.
If it attacked Kurt and Jericho, fine. What? Edge and... So that's... Okay. On the space of one episode of SmackDown, Triple H attacked Edge, Hogan, a ref, Kurt Angle, Chris Jericho, Reverend D-Von, Hardcore Holly, Test, Lance Storm, and Christian. Oh, also Starscream, a giant plane.
Yeah, it's all about the game.
Fuck's sake.
And also, Stacey thinks he's attractive.
Yeah.
Mate, Stacey loves big planes. Triple H is the best.
Are you a jumbo jet?
Just the fucking best, mate. Have you got a big cock?
No, I'm a plane. What the fuck's wrong with you? Triple H, you get in me. Why? Oh, no, not like that.
Ah!
Don't be weird. Don't be weird.
You made it weird. Triple H is just the best. What's the problem? He's the best. No one's tougher than him. No one's sexier than him. No one's funnier than him. He's just the best. Why is that so difficult?
This was
it's all about the game.
Reeking of insecurity.
It was, wasn't it? A lot of trip stuff does, sadly.
Yeah.
What's annoying is that Triple H as a performer isn't bad. He's actually very, very good. But all the stuff he does massively overcompensates.
Yeah.
And that's a real defining factor in this sort of reign of terror that we're not going to see much of on the Classic SmackDown.
Yay.
Hooray. That's me and Atkins to pick apart in a few years' time. But a lot of that is just like that insecurity that if he just let it breathe a bit, it's like the Triple H we know now, who is less about putting himself over and going, I'm just building a show. Shh, don't talk to me. I'm just building a show. Everyone's gone, yeah, you're great. That, you've got the mind for it. When he's front and center, when he was in his prime, he was, could be a bit of a speed bump for certain things.
Mm.
You know, there was that, which I wasn't a big fan of.
Yeah.
So, what did you remember from SmackDown?
I was going to say, until that, though, the main event was lovely. The Hogan Edge tag team has got legs.
Yeah.
Well, Edge has got legs.
And they know how to use them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's something they'll run with because, again, we need tag teams. So here's a nice way of extending Hogan's run in a way that doesn't knacker him and also potentially builds a new star in the same breath.
Wow.
There's a concept that works.
Yeah.
The legend and the young boy as a tag team. Good stuff.
Yeah.
What did you remember from this week's SmackDown?
Tom Cruise and Warwick Davis. I remembered the opening bit. Like, what the fuck? Like, I was just like aghast. Like, and then later on, these same dudes, these same nerds come out and dare to try and get a response in the crowd. Yeah, quite rightfully, especially during the Rev. Devon bit, like, just silent, going, you just got beat up.
Yeah.
There's six of our lads. Go away. Why am I watching this?
The heavy push of trips.
That guy at the ringside keeps on taunting. what's something you remembered?
Batista. I remember him showing up and me going, he looks like a big David Draymond and I like the look of him. I remember, I didn't think he'd gone to do what he did, obviously. Nowhere knowing that. But I remember him debuting thinking, that's cool. I like that. I like him. Vince likes big lads. He's a big lad. So I definitely remember this was the night that he debuted. What have you forgot from this episode?
Hogan going, I'm bald, motherfucker.
Yeah. Because again, like you said, it was something that could result in legal action.
Yes. Russo got sued for many things. But one of them was like, yeah, defamation of character. And people went, what does that mean? He cut a promo. He called me bald. You're not allowed to call me bald on TV.
I can't believe you called the bald man bald.
In my contract, you can't say that.
Can't call me bald.
Call me bald.
I genuinely forgot that Devon pinned Triple H.
It's easy to forget, isn't it?
Easy to forget. I thought maybe that match would end in a DQ.
Yeah, because there's Decepticons, the Stunticons.
Yeah. And I forgot that Devon has a pinfall victory over Triple H.
Insecticons.
Sexicons.
Megatron and Galvatron.
Sexicons.
Orson Welles, big fat robot. Now dead.
I was punched in the face by an Autobot, now dead.
A Fraser Crane. That could be a good Transformer.
Why was there not a Transformer called a Fraser Crane?
Fraser, go destroy Optimus.
Here's the
blues. Well, Starscream, I had tickets to the opera tonight, but I guess I'll interrupt everything for you.
Sherry, Starscream.
It's a really sarcastic Crane. He's trying to drink a sherry with his big scoop.
Just because I'm a robot doesn't mean I can't be sophisticated.
Should try transforming into a nicer personality if you ask me, Starscream.
I know we're robots in disguise, but they're disguising this macchiato as something that vaguely resembles coffee.
Hey, that's it. That's it. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Tom. Plug anything.
Right. Are you watching Gladiators?
What
now? No, in general. Are you watching Gladiators?
No. Should I be?
Yeah.
What channel is it on?
BBC One.
Oh, I don't have a TV license.
Because that's true. Because the final tonight, it features Wesley, who is a professional wrestler. Wesley and Serico in the finals of Gladiators.
I've never heard of him. What's he done?
True Grit Wrestling. He's based around there. He does stuff for Tidal.
Does he?
Yeah, he does stuff pretty much north of the UK.
Bloody hell, he's a northerner.
Yeah, northerner, Sheffield born and bred. He's the only wrestler taking part in Gladiators, amazingly. And he's in the bloody final tonight. So we had a chat the other day, and you can listen to that on the podcast feed right now. I had a lovely chat with Wesley from Gladiators, who is, I don't know what the result is tonight. It was recorded a long time ago. He wouldn't tell me, NDAs and all that. And we're going to cheer him on tonight on Gladiators. But get to know him on the podcast feed right now. He's a good lad. On Easter, okay, so tomorrow it is episode 3 of Roads to WrestleMania on the podcast feed. We are deep diving the entire journey of Cody Rhodes to WrestleMania's main event, and it's the AEW years. So we'll talk about his time in AEW tomorrow. Yeah.
Best of times or blurs of times?
It is the best and the blurs of times.
What's Wesley's name?
Wesley N. Serico.
Is he a gladiator or is he...
He's a contestant.
Oh, he's a competitor. Oh, sorry,
he's
mate.
He's a competitor.
Oh.
He's a competitor. So if you search Wesley Gladiators on...
I assumed he'd be a gladiator.
No. He's a competitor. So he's about to win it, I reckon.
Wesley Male, hell yeah.
I've got no evidence of that, but I reckon he's about to win it. Come on, Wesley.
It'd be great if he'd been in Botchamania or something.
I don't know.
Is you messing up? Well done on winning Gladiators.
Sweet. Get him on. He'd be good for that.
Oh, sweet.
So on Monday, Easter Monday, it's a Desert Island Graps featuring... So they announced that Masha Slamovich is fighting Shayna Baszler at Bloodsport this week coming for WrestleMania,
yes.
Right? On the same day, they announced WWE star Shayna Baszler was doing Bloodsport. They also announced the first ever British competitor for Bloodsport.
Who?
Newcastle's own Big Lou Nixon.
Ooh!
So Lou Nixon is off to the States. He popped in yesterday to have a chat for Desert Island Graps. So we have a good chat with basically the Alan Shearer of Bloodsport before he goes to take over the world. Get to know Lou Nixon on Easter Monday. Lovely to get him in. Good lad. And that's all the things I'm plugging. Anything you want to plug? New Botchamania over the Easter weekend?
Yeah. It'll be out by the time you look at this.
Brilliant.
Really excited.
Really
excited. New Botchamania is coming out.
There it is.
Suck my balls.
That too. Twitch streaming? Are you on Twitch?
Maybe.
I haven't done it in a while because I've been... that sounds really dismissive. I've just been... I'll do it if there's nothing happening in my life. And this stuff happens, I'm like, no, I've got real life stuff. But I'll do one on Thursdays. That's absolutely fine. But I'll be invited to a little party on Sunday. So I'll be going to that.
Lovely. If you come into North, come and have a nice time at North. On Saturday, NCL Cup on Saturday.
Ooh.
Busy weekend, Jesus H. Christ. I better go and have a sleep. Saturday being today, by the way. And of course, for the latest wrestling news throughout the week, you can check out Coldaholic.com. He's at Matthew Gregg on Twitter. I'm at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Together, we're at Coldaholic on Twitter. Don't forget to join us, Sherry Megatron.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. Quite stylish. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face. What is a boy to do? Frasier has left the building.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.